After years of losses, it's now unveiled sweeping reforms. At Deutsche Bank, that is. 18,000 jobs to go. Tens of billions of dollars worth of assets up for sale. But the giant bank has talked about change for many years. Do investors now believe it?
One of Google's so-called moonshots is trying to get its high-flying internet balloons off the ground in Kenya, where the tech giant hopes to deliver 4G cell phone services in its first commercial test ever. Born in 2011, Loon is now collaborating with Telkom Kenya to bring services to remote mountain villagers in the coming months. Loon provided free services to wireless carriers in Peru and Puerto Rico after cell phone towers were knocked out by an earthquake and hurricane.
Britain's flagship airline is facing a record $230 million fine for theft of data from hundreds of thousands of customers who used its websites last year. British Airways, owned by IAG, said it was, quote, surprised and disappointed by the penalty. And the parent company said it planned to appeal the fine. It said the attack, which affected 500,000 people, involved traffic to the BA website being diverted to a fraudulent site, where names and addresses, payment cards and travel booking details were harvested.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's July the 9th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day here getting underway. Coming up on the program today, we'll have a conversation about the cost of cancer. The cost of cancer deaths putting a huge strain not only on families but also the economy. We'll talk about the numbers this morning. Andrew Keschner will join us from Market Watch, where he's been reporting about this. A little bit later in the program, at about 5:38 this morning, the U.S. overflowing with natural gas, but not everyone getting to use it. The Wall Street Journal has been writing about that, and we'll talk to Stephanie Yang a little bit later in the program, about 5:38 this morning. Also this morning, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports as we move through the hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after the tech sector's poor performance resulted in declines at the close yesterday amid an analyst downgraded to stock from neutral to sell. That's Apple. Apple shares down more than 2%. At the closing bell, the Dow was down nearly 116 points. The Nasdaq lost 63. The S&P was down 14. Moving forward this week, investors will be keeping a close eye for news related to the economy and monetary policy from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, who's set to testify on Capitol Hill at midweek. We'll also keep you posted on some economic reports due out today and some other data points as Small Business Optimism Index leads off this morning's reports, and we'll get that as we move forward here this morning. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, though, we see this morning some weakness in the futures market heading to the opening bell. Dow futures off 127 points, nearly 0.5%. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off about 0.5% as well. In Europe, lots of red on the screen as well. In London, off nearly 0.25%. In Germany, off more than 1%. In France, off nearly 0.5%. The day is going to end the day mixed in Asia with the Nikkei off up just about 30 points, fractionally higher this morning. In Hong Kong, off nearly 0.75%, the Hang Seng down 215. And in China, markets are generally lower as well. And oil in the U.S. is trading at $57.88 a barrel. Virgin Galactic reportedly planning to go public, according to the Wall Street Journal. Richard Branson's space tourism company has struck a deal with a special purpose acquisition company that will invest $800 million for a 49% stake in Virgin Galactic. It's believed the deal could be officially announced as early as this morning. Legislative effort to outlaw forced arbitration in California is being considered by lawmakers this week. It's a move that is being watched in other states like Illinois across the country. Assemblywoman there says the measure called AB 51 would forbid companies from acquiring workers to sign away their right to go to court as condition of employment. The California Chamber of Commerce says the bill would clog the courts and drive up litigation costs. And the chamber is also targeting an effort to allow striking workers to collect unemployment benefits while on the picket lines. Let's begin this morning with the cost of cancer. New reporting shows that the cost on the economy reaching nearly $100 billion. We all know the personal and health costs of cancer, but this adds a new wrinkle to the story. Let's bring in Andrew Keschner this morning, reporter at MarketWatch, who's been covering this. Andrew, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on again.
You know, I mentioned the personal and physical cost of cancer. I think that's pretty clear to everybody. It can be very costly to individuals as well. But what are we talking about here? Just the overall cost that's being pulled out of the overall money that's being pulled out of the national economy?
That's right. What they're looking at in this study is people who, victims of cancer, people who died of cancer, the money that they would have made if they survived. So their lifetime earnings that have been, robbed of them and, robbed of the country.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that price tag is $94.4 billion.
The American Cancer Society study talking about this. Why would they are they doing this? Why do they want us to know these numbers?
Well, it's kind of a grim topic. Thinking hard about what would have been, but it's what they're trying to do is put this price tag on missed lifetime's earnings in order to impress the importance of preventative care and screenings and everything that can be done to avoid and bring down this number and save people and save their lives.
Yeah, and that's I think you hit it right on the head there. Talk to us a little bit about those things that we all could be doing, I guess, to perhaps live a little longer and reach our potential.
Yeah, in this study, they noted that just about under half of the of all cancer deaths are linked to things like smoking and having weighing too much and what you eat and your physical activity or lack thereof, it's talking about things like that and putting in the close tie there.
Yeah, and it's a good point to kind of focus in on. The American Cancer Society says if people started doing some of that stuff, what kind of years could we add to the collective life of all of the people who have cancer?
They didn't quite say it that way, but what they did say is they broke it down in various states, in various regions, to show that people take care of themselves or people have access to health care in different ways in different spots in the country. And it turns out that Utah there was the least money coming out. The people were deprived of money the least, whereas in Kentucky was, I think, the most. The South was the most. And what they're saying is if every state could at the very least resemble Utah, there would be almost $28 billion less in lost earnings.
What are they doing in Utah that they're not doing in Kentucky?
Well, it seems like there's less smoking, first off, and I think as well as access to health care in a way that there might not be in Kentucky. But definitely the smoking was one of them. They really hit home on that it's very low in Utah, at least compared to the South, where it's much more common for men, at the very least, to be smokers.
Yeah, and in your reporting, you talk about, too, the access to health care and the treatment rates. A surprising number, 50% of patients in Louisiana with early stage lung cancer were able to get surgery, 75% in Utah. It's a big difference in number there.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think part of that is, you know, now we're getting into, you know, healthcare and lack thereof and the complexities there, you know, prevalence of employer-sponsored care, and then there's, you know, Medicaid, and then it also just boils down to the money that people have to pay out of their pocket to get to the hospital, to go to those follow-up cares, to see the specialists. You know, another part of this, you know, the study is talking about the earnings that are lost, you know, when someone dies of cancer, but even the survivors of cancer, and there are many, know that it's a very, very costly thing. There was also a recent study talking about, you know, I think it was about 1 in 4 cancer survivors had problems paying their bills, and that's according to the Centers for Disease Control. So, you know, it boils down to the money, you know, the financial, you know, resources to take on these big procedures.
Yeah, and I think people who are listening probably will get that, the expense and also the debt that cancer patients rack up while in treatment can lead to bankruptcy, quite frankly.
Right, right. In that same CDC study, they were saying that the out-of-pocket expenses for someone fighting cancer were about $400 every year higher than someone without it, and about 25% said they had to, you know, cover their costs by either borrowing money, going into debt, or declaring bankruptcy. And I mean, I can't imagine, you know, declaring bankruptcy or any of those things while you're trying to, you know, fight cancer.
The story is about cancer deaths and the cost on the economy. 500,000 Americans died of cancer in 2015, $94.4 billion in lifetime earning potential lost among those cancer victims. Andrew, this morning, you know, I think as we listen to the first part of the interview, people are asking, well, what is the answer here? What's the solution? Is it a policy issue? I know we've talked about, too, the preventable part of this, doing more to be healthy, or is it a combination of all of these things?
I got to believe it's probably a combination of everything. More access to health care, better health care. You know, I mean, how that comes about, you know, I will leave that to the experts, but that's most certainly part of it. But another part of it is what, you know, everyone can do themselves, you know, taking care of themselves. If they're smoking, you know, kicking the habit, if they're not active, you know, trying to get active, you know, scheduling checkups and doing their best to take care of themselves.
Yeah, because the problem is only getting worse. Your story talks about the Cancer Society study and what their projections are for cancer deaths moving forward. It is a continuing grim story.
It is. I mean, you know, a little bit of context. As a whole, the cancer rate from 91 to, I think, 2015 has fallen. That's according to the National Cancer Institute. But still, there's going to be a projected, I think it's about 600,000 cancer deaths this year, according to the American Cancer Society. So, and cancer is the second leading cause of death behind heart disease, which is also something that is, you know, that is preventable. That you can take steps to address. It is not going away, as you said.
Yeah, and you know, we've only talked about, and I know the study only touched on the, you know, the lost potential of people who've died of cancer, and not the people, not the lost earnings, because I know in your story you talked about, let's say somebody is still living with cancer and they can't make it to work every day, or they've missed a promotion or something like that. That seems to be an area ripe for more research.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they noted that that was a, you know, something they couldn't address, and so the number is, you know, likely much larger.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you for being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting. We appreciate it.
Great, thanks for having me on,
Andrew Keschner from MarketWatch.com. We're going to link out to a story on this a little bit later this morning in the podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNRadio.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Natural gas prices vary widely across the country, but not because of a lack of supplies. As a matter of fact, U.S. natural gas production rose to a record amount last year, up 44% from a decade earlier. So what's going on and how might it affect you? Let's bring in Stephanie Yang, energy reporter at the Wall Street Journal, who's been writing and covering this. Stephanie, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
So what's going on here, I think, is the question. Is this an infrastructure problem? It sounds like it.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of it comes down to infrastructure. So like you mentioned, we're seeing record levels of U.S. production of natural gas, so much so that, you know, we're exporting it to other countries and becoming a leading exporter in that. And yet we're seeing this phenomenon where certain areas, in particular the New York City area, can't get any more natural gas because, you know, the utilities are saying, well, our pipelines are full. We can't take on new customers.
Yeah, in the New York City example, there's actually a stoppage of accepting new customers because of this, right?
Right, yeah. So both utilities that service the New York City area, Con Edison and National Grid, said earlier this year that they stopped processing new customer requests, and that's in, you know, Westchester County, just north of New York City, and also in Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island.
What is this doing to cost? I mentioned in the opening that it's the prices vary widely across the country. What are we talking about there?
Yeah, sure. So it's really interesting. If you look at the national benchmark for U.S. natural gas prices, it's pretty low historically. You know, when it's traded on the futures market, it's mostly below $3 per MMBTU. And something that we mentioned in the story is if you think about, you know, a million British thermal units, that's about enough to dry 50 loads of laundry. But then, you know, if you look at that and contrast the two certain regions, it's very, very different. So, for example, in 2018, that winter, New York City area prices rose as high as, you know, $160 per MMBTU. And then at the same time, earlier this year, you have prices in Washington rising to $200, which is, you know, the highest we've ever seen in the U.S. And then in contrast to that, you have the West Texas area where producers are, you know, having so much natural gas just produced alongside oil that they don't know what to do with it. So they're paying people to take it away. Prices this year dropped to negative $9. And another way of getting rid of it is just burning it off in the night sky.
Yeah, and that seems like a big waste, and especially, you know, people who have short and, well, long memories even, too. When weather gets bad and these prices go up and it's the availability issue is back, bad winter weather, they'd like to have some of that free natural gas, I bet.
Right.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit about what's being done to clear some of these supply lines and fix the problem.
Yeah, so in particular, Con Edison said that it reached an agreement with two of the pipelines that serve that area to increase capacity. The problem there is, you know, pending regulatory approval and going through all of those steps, the earliest that those would come into service is 2023. So for the foreseeable future, you know, we're in the same issue. And then they're also exploring, you know, other ways to get natural gas to customers without pipelines. So, for example, you know, they've talked about trucking in supplies. So putting like natural gas on trucks, you know, compressed or liquefied, and driving it to where it needs to go. I think there's also, you know, been discussion or proposals of building facilities to turn waste or compost into natural gas since it releases methane. And that would, I mean, that would also take a couple of years to complete. Even with that, you know, it's not solving their problem fully. So a lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, what exactly to do here. And in the Westchester area, people are also experimenting with, you know, other technologies like heat pumps, which transfer heat between the ground and the air, you know, as another alternative if they can't get gas.
In the short and long term, does this mean perhaps the production of natural gas is going to have to be pulled back a little bit?
That's a really good question, particularly, you know, if they're not servicing certain areas of demand. So far, I don't think so. I think people are still, pretty optimistic on the levels of production that, the U.S. Oil and gas industry will reach. So we've been seeing, a couple of years of record, hitting new records, and that's expected to happen again this year.
And what does the export market look like? I know that we export a lot of this. Is that something where we might find new markets and do a little bit more exporting?
Yeah, that's what people are hoping for in the industry. And so there's a lot of money going into building these terminals, mostly on the Gulf Coast, but, in a couple of other areas as well. And I believe we have two active right now in the U.S. That take, natural gas and basically cool it so it turns into a liquid and then load that on tankers and ship it overseas. Particularly like in Asia and Europe, generally those prices tend to be higher than what you can get in the U.S. too.
The trucking of natural gas, that's an interesting concept. What would go behind that? And are there any dangers? I'm guessing that there would be. And would there be blowback to that from consumers?
That's also a really good question. The safety questions do come up. Talking to some of these utilities, trucking compressed natural gas, which has been used for a while in the industry. It's just, it's on a pretty small scale. So it's not something that, comes up, frequently, but, when I talk to Con Ed or other utilities about this, they say, it's something that we've used before. The interesting thing is also, liquefied natural gas, that's something that I don't think is as common because the U.S. is, getting more into that export market and having more of these terminals that can change the gas into liquid form.
Stephanie, these are all good problems to have when you have a supply issue like this where it's plentiful. Talk to us about why people are so interested in natural gas, the benefits to the climate, chief among them, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's also something that is, been changing. So for a long time, natural gas has been thought of as this, transition fuel where we want to get off burning oil or coal, but we're not quite there with solar and wind. So natural gas seems like, the missing puzzle piece to put, in the middle and get us through that. But as we've gotten further along in the new renewables process, people are, becoming more critical of natural gas and due to the environmental consequences that fracking and also natural gas usage lead to. So, one of the things that we explored with the story is what you're seeing with when a company wants to build a pipeline. There's a lot more resistance because people are more against using natural gas and they want to remove that from the equation, which will push us faster towards renewables.
Yeah, and then back to the trucking conversation, if you end up putting more trucks on the road because of this, you're sort of negating any gains you made in the other area.
Right, it's interesting there are some trade-offs, with trucking and then also with, the flaring in certain areas where there's too much natural gas and they just have to burn it because obviously that has its own environmental consequences as well. So it's interesting to see how those things kind of get shuffled around.
Yeah. So what would be the advice? And I know you're not in the business of giving advice, but I'm sure investors are listening to this. Is natural gas still a good investment if you want to spend money on it?
So, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not, like you said, in the business of giving advice. I think people are generally in agreement that the futures market, where you see the national price being set, that's pretty much going to stay low. It used to be that natural gas market was a very, very exciting market with really big swings that could, make or break traders and investments. And now it's just gotten very sleepy. There's not a lot of volatility. There's not a lot of movement. And that's also because we have so much supply that overall in the U.S., those risks, you know, about running out of supplies have really come down.
Well, Stephanie, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Stephanie Yang, energy reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We'll link out to her story as well, but you can find it online at WSJ.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures down 100 points. Nearly a third on the S&P as well, nearly a half a percent on the NASDAQ. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The weekly crop progress reports showed very little change yesterday. USDA rated 53% of the soybean crop good to excellent. That's down 1% from last week. Corn, on the other hand, saw an increase, with 57% being good to excellent. That's up 1% from last week. And winter wheat, also up 1% from last week, with the good to excellent rating reported at 64%. Grain markets also looking ahead to Thursday's monthly supply and demand forecast from the USDA. USDA surprised the market with its June 28th acreage report, and one trader said the USDA needs to tread lightly with this report or else they will have egg all over their face. So at the close yesterday, we saw the July wheat contract down 4.5 cents, July corn up 4.75, July soybeans up 3.25, and in livestock trade, October lean hogs down $1.97, the October live cattle down 52, and the October feeder cattle down 7 cents a hundredweight. While we have been sweltering in heat in the Midwest, just the opposite has been happening in South America. Frost reported in several agricultural areas in Brazil over the weekend, including coffee and sugarcane production regions, as an intense polar air mass sweeps through the country. Cane, coffee, and late-planted winter corn, the most vulnerable, but it'll take several weeks to determine the actual damage. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from forcing drug companies to disclose their prices in TV ads. The U.S. District Judge noted that the Department of Health and Human Services doesn't have the authority to force drug companies to list prices. The judge noted that only Congress could impose such a rule, even though he admitted that having drug prices publicized could help bring down prescription costs. The Health and Human Services Secretary announced the rule back in May, forcing companies to list the price of 30-day supplies of drugs that cost more than $35 a month. Hospitals are often charging five times as much for their medicines. New analysis from the Moran Company says that that's driving up cost sharing and premiums for patients across the country. Most of the hospitals studied purchased their meds through the discount program that was designed to make sure vulnerable or uninsured patients have access to less expensive medicines. According to the analysis, though, many hospitals are providing less care to needy patients and instead are making excessive profits as a result of the program. And Microsoft Corporation and an Ohio-based provider of telecommunications have announced an agreement to extend broadband internet access to underserved rural areas of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio over the next 3 years. The deal announced yesterday between Microsoft and Lima-based Watch Communications aims to make reliable high-speed internet available to nearly 815,000 people. It expands similar agreements that included Microsoft's National Airband Initiative, such as a deal that Microsoft struck last year with another company that served rural Ohio. Tech giant Facebook launched a broadband initiative in West Virginia in March. That is also one that is seen spreading across the country. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, July the 9th, the Small Business Optimism Index for June leads off today's economic reports. The overall index picked up 1.5 points in May, while elements hit some of the highest levels ever. Planned capital outlays were near historic highs across a range of industries, including transportation, manufacturing, professional services, and construction. Also today, we'll get the job opening and labor turnover survey. A couple of Fed speakers out as well on the earnings calendar today. Levi Strauss & Company, PepsiCo, and WD-40 all reporting quarterly financial earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, July the 9th.